The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
New York, California, very high unemployment rates, 7.6%, close to 2.5 points higher than the national average. Why? Well, I believe it's not just lockdowns. I believe it's longer-term economic policies that have stifled growth, but they're policies that are now being urged on the president by, you know, Chuck Schumer of New York and Speaker Nancy Pelosi of California.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Well, good afternoon and welcome back. It is great to be with you this afternoon. Boy, a lot to talk about, right? The president warning of a recession. That was Eugene Scalia, the previous United States Secretary of Labor, cautioning the president about spending as job growth slows. And something I'm monitoring, something I'm keeping an eye on. We've talked about inflation. I'll continue to try to bring you up to speed on what's happening in the economy. As you saw this morning, I didn't check the market before coming into the studio here, but even before the opening bell, you know, the Dow was down, I think, 500 and some points. So concern about what's happening over in China, and also concern with what's happening here in our own country as well. But we've got a lot to get into today. A little bit later, I just want to give you a quick look forward. Dr. Paul Kengor is going to be stopping by. He wrote a piece that I do want to discuss. I want to be, well, how do I say this? I want to be respectful. I want to be charitable. I want to be courteous. He wrote a piece that I saw, and I think it deserves discussion. He wrote about reparation. You know, we often make reparation for our sin, for our mistakes, right? It's what we should do. In fact, the angel of Fatima came to the children, told them they should do penance. We know how important reparation is in the spiritual life. Well, he says that Catholics who voted for Biden, it's time to make reparation. And he's talking, of course, about all that's now unfolding with the Texas bill, banning abortions, and all the things the president is threatening to do. So, you know, from a spiritual perspective, I think it's an important message. And I want to, you know, it's hard to take the politics out of that, but it's something I do want to talk about. I mean, reparation. Why reparation? What will that do? If we made a mistake, you know, a lot of people are Sunday Catholics. They go to Mass on Sunday, and they act and they conduct and they comport and they vote totally different come Monday, right? They walk out of the church and suddenly they throw out their Catholic values. So I do think we need greater prayer, and I do think we need to do penance for our country, and I do think we need reparation for the mistakes that we have made. But we'll talk about that coming up. It should be a great, great, great conversation. In fact, Andrea Pacciotti is going to be stopping by too. We're going to talk about why the Satanic Temple is backing big abortion. Is that any surprise to you? Nah, not to me either. Of course not. Dr. Mark Miravalli, who's a good friend of the show, once said to me, he says, abortion, Drew, is, you know, it's Satan's high holy sacrament. That's what it is. Church of Satan loves it. And I've often shared with you what Mother Teresa said. She said that the fruit of abortion is what? Nuclear war. Nuclear war. I mean, those are haunting words from a great, great saint. But, you know, as the Biden administration continues to add more debt to our nation's stockpile of it, I saw a number. They were $28.5 trillion right now, moving towards $30 trillion in debt. People are not very happy with the prospect of rising taxes, and that's what they're going to do. There's a talk right now about raising your taxes to cover all the spending that wants to be done. There was a poll conducted by Americans for Tax Reform. And I saw this over the weekend. They said they took this poll, and they found that 80% of voters oppose raising taxes to pay for all the debt incurred because of the pandemic. That's not a surprising stat. I mean, who wants their taxes raised, right? But it comes, and just put it in perspective of where we are right now, it comes as the administration came out. They sent a warning to all 50 governors of this great nation. They said if Congress doesn't raise the debt ceiling, that means the federal government will have to start paying back its loans, and it's going to trigger a recession, they're saying. So we're just giving you a heads up. We want you to be aware America is on the forefront of a recession. That's Joe Biden. So there's a proposal from the House Ways and Means Committee that would raise taxes, but some groups are saying, look, you know who's going to hit? It's going to impact the middle class and even lower class taxpayers. It's really going to put the crunch on them within 5 years, despite and you've heard this probably a million times, the president saying, I'm not going to raise taxes on anyone earning less than $400,000 a year. And I'm for most Americans are like, oh, that's great. I'm safe, right? Well, wait till you see what unfolds ahead. You're already paying for it. I mean, take a look at the recession that look at the inflation that is impacting people. I just saw a report earlier today, too, that your fuel prices, natural gas, you know, how you heat your home, perhaps, going to be on the rise. You're going to be paying more. So, and I'm not here to scare you. I'm just, you know, we need to be prudent with how we spend money. We do in this country. And the policies that are now enacted in order to pass sometimes very liberal agendas are being buried in this bailout. I think it's just wrong. I'm sure you probably agree. When it comes to COVID, it had a profound impact on this country. I mean, we were steaming along, weren't we? We were cruising. Pandemic comes in the last year of the Trump administration. Now, Joe Biden is the president, and we see what is happening economically. We are seeing these international situations that are unfold. And, of course, we're seeing people being upset and concerned about mandates and government overreach. Pfizer announced today that after testing on kids as young as 5 years old, they think that, yeah, the vaccine is going to generate a strong immune response in kids. So they used a dose that's about a third as strong as what you might have gotten if you've gotten the Pfizer vax. They looked at a pretty big group of kids, about 4,500 of them between the ages 5 and 11. And, of course, here's the thing on that, right? The disease doesn't really impact kids as much as it does adults. Now, I know the Delta variant has had a greater impact on them, but officials they want to get them vaccinated. They really want to get them vaccinated. And the FDA still has to give its stamp of approval for giving it to these kids. But I was saying to my wife, I watched a piece last night on the news, and they were looking at COVID deaths. And we talked about, you know, a report. I think I reported last Friday or Thursday to you. The estimates right now are that 1 in 500 Americans have died as a result of COVID. Cheryl Atkinson did a piece I saw over the weekend, and she looked at the reporting. And this is something I'm going to look at in the days ahead, because I think you need to be in the know on this. She spoke to a coroner who claims that a murder-suicide was put down as a COVID death. A heart attack was put down as a COVID death. A car accident was put down as a COVID death. A suicide. I mean, she went through this whole litany of things that she saw in her own community there. It makes me wonder, you know, about this reporting. Why do you want to inflate the numbers? Who does it benefit? And is it out of pure good intention that you want to get the entire nation vaccinated? Or is there some other agenda here? I'm just throwing this out. You know, why fudge the numbers? Why not the truth? Why not tell us, okay, if it's not 1 in 500, it's 1 in 2,000 that died from COVID, or 1 in 5? Why not just give us the truth? Why inflate those numbers? Why mandate vaccinations, right? You can't fly, you know, well, I shouldn't say that. You can't go see a football game. You can't get in the theaters. You can't get into certain restaurants or bars. I mean, there are certain policies that are now being enacted. And a lot of people are going to lose their jobs if they don't get the mandate. You know, what Biden wants to do with employers that have more than 100 employees. And people have called, they've shared with us here on the program about how, hey, I'm going to lose my job because of this. Why the strong push? Why so intensive? And now, why do you want to inoculate? Why do you want to vaccinate kids 5 to 11 years of age? You know, I don't have the answer for it. I really don't, other than if I look at the good intention, hey, they're concerned about the common good, and they want to get herd immunity, and they want to keep everybody safe. Okay, so that's one thought. But then there's a lot of other people saying, hey, is there some sort of other agenda here? You know, George Soros, Bill Gates Foundation, you hear about all those people. Is it a way to do some sort of population control? Not that there's metal in your vaccine or there's microchips or there's things that some people think, but does it affect fertility? You know, what's with the push? I don't know. I am just throwing stuff out here. There's two different trends of thought. But when I see kids 5 to 11, the desire to want to vaccinate them, when I see the false reporting of the numbers that come out, when I see the mandates being pushed, I've never seen anything like this. I just want to be objective, step back, look at the big picture. I'll continue to monitor it. And as more of this comes to the fore, I'll report on it. You make the decision. You can discern what you think is behind all this. And of course, every week I try to give you a look at the latest news regarding COVID, the developments, the vaccinations, And I'll do that a little bit later in the week for you as well. But you have to look at what's happening here. This is something I personally have a problem with. I'm not the Bishop of Canada or of the Archdiocese of Moncton, I should say. It's in New Brunswick, Canada. But I had seen a report that if you're not fully vaccinated, you're not going to be allowed to go to Mass. If you're not vaccinated in that archdiocese, you're not allowed to go to Mass. Now, this province has a population of about 780,000. They've only lost 50 people due to COVID, but the provincial officials there are concerned about the uptick in cases that they're now seeing, so they're requiring proof of vaccination to engage in indoor activities. The archdiocese decided to go along with it, and they said, you know, that includes Sunday and weekend masses, weekday masses, you know, baptisms, weddings, funerals, parishes, you know, parish and pastoral meetings, whatever, catechesis, social meetings, whatever. You know, all of these different things. Okay, so maybe I'll buy into the pastoral meetings, the parish meetings, the social meetings. But really, masses, baptisms, weddings, funerals? Can't come to a funeral if you're not vaccinated? Can't go and receive the Eucharist? Can't receive the sacraments? Now, I'm not here to throw stones at the church. I mean, that's the bishop's decision there. And I'm sure he's doing it out of great concern for his bishop, for his diocese. But the archbishop said volunteers are expected to be at church doors and ask the attendees for full proof of vaccination, collect their names, supposedly so they don't keep asking them every week. But he said the list might be requested from the government. And I know people are very concerned about their privacy there. You probably have seen what's happened in Australia, our brothers and sisters down under. And I received an email from a listener who listens to us in Australia. And I want to just have a extend a warm welcome to everyone down under who listens to the program. I'm so grateful for you. She says, could you do some coverage on what's now unfolding in Australia? Police right now are on alert in Melbourne. There was a standoff that began last night, and construction workers and trade union members, that they've been protesting the lockdown conditions, the mandatory vaccination ruling that's there. Let me just share with you a glimpse of what's unfolding. This comes from 7 News in Australia.
A city in lockdown and an industry at flashpoint. As a tradie war erupts outside the CFMEU's Elizabeth Street headquarters. These construction workers say they're fighting back against forced vaccination. Their anger aimed at their own union. After a 7-hour standoff, it exploded at 4 p.m. when heavily armed police arrived.
And the police behind us, we need to move.
Police were pelted with bottles. Staff trapped inside used hoses in a desperate attempt to clear the mob. Furious workers descended on their union around 9 this morning to vent over a looming deadline. If they don't have at least one vaccine dose or a booking to get one...
Freedom! Wow. That's Australia. You remember after the mass shooting they had down there, they took a lot of the guns. If you've seen any of the video, and I've been watching some of what's unfolding in the streets, people protesting, being brutally arrested. The crackdown there is unbelievable, really is unbelievable. But city in lockdown, people screaming they want their freedom. Let's respect our own freedoms here. Let's not, you know, you lose freedom. It's very hard to get it back. You know, you lose liberties. It's very hard to get them back. That's why you have to be vigilant in protecting them. You know, here in the U.S., there was a recent poll that found that Catholics, believe it or not, are the most vaccinated group in the country. Catholics are the most vaccinated religious group in the country. 82%, it was the number I saw, self-identified Catholics said that they received at least one shot of the vaccine. And King County, Washington, which encompasses Seattle, they've issued a mandate that if you want to enter restaurants or bars or do any sort of indoor recreational events or, you know, be part of any even outdoor recreational events where 500 or more people are gathered, you now have to show your proof of vaccination. So we're seeing more of this. Italy, I've talked about in the past, right? Officials have the strictest vaccine mandate on the planet. When COVID first took place, you saw how decimated Italy, and it has just taken a terrible toll on that great nation. But all public and private employees have to show proof that they've been vaccinated. They've recently recovered from, you know, from the disease, and you got to show that you've tested negatively before going to work. And if you don't, you're going to be suspended from work without pay, although you can't be fired. And again, you'll be fined. This is Italy, 600 to 1500 euros. In Spain, totally different story. The Supreme Court there recently ruled that a vax mandate in the state of Andalusia is unconstitutional. They said that it violated the basic rights of assembly and freedom of movement. So the court also said, because the evidence that was presented that vaccines don't stop infection, they don't prevent the spread of disease, allowing vaccinated people to gather could actually contribute to the spread of the disease. And they cited an event in Britain, which they only allowed, I think, vaccinated people in, and 5,000 new cases were traced to that event. So unbelievable stuff. Finally, one last story here. This is the advent of something I think you're going to see much more of. I don't know if you saw the crew of four people that took a SpaceX rocket into space. No astronauts were on it. They returned very safely on Saturday. It wouldn't be major news, but the crew of four were all civilians. That was it, all civilians. They had been civilian ride-alongs, you know, on previous flights, but those were all led by military career astronauts. This is the first time an all-civilian crew has done this. So a big, big landmark, really, for space, if you will. They went further than the International Space Station, and SpaceX got all kind of inquiries about private people flying into space, and they think you could probably do it in 5 years or so. So if you want to see the Earth from orbit, that might be a reality. Bob McDonald was reporting on the first civilian space expedition through SpaceX, and here's a little bit of this report coming from the CBC.
The private sector has truly taken over sending people into space. SpaceX got it right. The launch went off exactly on time. The rocket booster was recycled. It'd flown in space before. The capsule that they were riding in has flown in space before, which made this flight far, far cheaper than the former space shuttles that NASA was flying. The training of these civilians happened in 5 months, and it was done without NASA's help at all. So this is showing that the private sector can now take over putting people in space and bringing them back. And I equate this with what happened at the end of World War II, when companies like Boeing were hired by the government to develop big four-engine bombers for the war effort. Then when the war ended, Boeing took that same technology and turned them into airliners.
All right. Who knows what the future holds? It's exciting. I've always dreamt of going to space. But as time marches on, I'm thinking, well, maybe not. Well, you never say never, right? Who knows? I'm going to take a short break. When we come back, I want to fill you in on what's happening with the U.S. and a partnership. The president, I was a little embarrassed by his lack of remembering the name of another world leader. There were only two that he had to remember. And I'll share a little bit of the audio for you. And we'll talk a little bit about our relationship with France. Also, Dr. Sean O'Mara is going to be stopping by. And the right now, the numbers of obesity in the country are on the rise. Some are attributing COVID to that. We'll look at what's driving it, what you need to know, all that and more right ahead.
Your news, the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio. Your news now.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forrester.
Get caught up on this conversation and all the others by going to the Relevant Radio archives. Just search for The Drew Mariani Show.
Yeah, be sure to hit that. relevantradio.com. Do a search for our podcast. Lots of great content. You can stream through weeks, literally months of wonderful conversation. And as you know, in this program, it's always a mixed bag. I try to bring you up to speed on the most important issues of the day and give you a moral perspective on that. Hey, there was a situation that unfolded dealing with our allies down under, the Australians. And Australia, of course, is a fascinating continent. It has a very interesting geopolitical situation. It's a Western nation, mostly established by Britain when it sent its prisoners during the 19th century there. But it also sits between the Indian and the Pacific Oceans. So it's surrounded by far eastern countries, and China is not that far from them. And apparently China's been buying up a lot of property there, so much so that one Aussie state doubled the tax on foreign entities that purchase property in it. But along with that, China's been increasing its threat towards the West and pushing its claims of sovereign territory further into the South China Sea. And we've been reporting on this for quite a while now. But that, of course, directly impacts Australia. In the past, the land down under has maintained a very decent military force, but they just reached an agreement that is a lot more aggressive. They signed a contract with the U.S. and Britain to develop nuclear-powered submarines for them. And before this, they had an agreement with France to buy these diesel-powered subs, but they suddenly dispensed with that agreement. And as you know, France was not happy. So the president last week, and I don't want to disparage him, but I want this on your radar as well. I don't know where the vice president is on this. And, you know, she may be president. I find it a little strange he couldn't remember the name the Aussie prime minister, Scott Morrison. Last week, they had this virtual conference, and you had the prime minister of the UK and Australia there to talk about this new defense initiative. And here's how it went. The president, of course, first turning towards Boris Johnson. But listen, I'll play just a little bit of audio. You can hear how this went down.
Biden was joined by UK leader Boris Johnson and Australia's Scott Morrison to announce a major new military alliance called AUKUS. It's a defense pact on what Biden says is his top foreign policy priority, the justification even for his disastrous Afghan pullout, a focus on constraining China. This was a new multi-billion dollar military pact with nuclear submarines, intelligence sharing, troop deployments, the lot. And this is how it went down.
Thank you, Boris. And I want to thank that fellow down under. Thank you very much, pal. Appreciate it, Mr. Prime Minister.
The Prime Minister of Australia, that fellow down under. There are three countries in this new alliance, the US, the UK and Australia. It wasn't the G20. It wasn't even the G7. He only had to remember two names.
Yeah, I don't want to operate with a lack of charity, but that's just for your good to know file. Thank you, pal. Thank you to the fellow down under. I have concern. I want to be honest with you. I do. I have concern when I see that type of behavior. Is it just a mistake? Hey, it's possible. I forget the things all the time, but I don't know. As you just heard, it's not the G20. You know, it's not the G7. You have two names. You're going in. You're talking about something that is really irritated one of our longest allies, France. You should at least get that right. Hey, I'm joined right now by Brent Sadler. He's a senior fellow for Naval Warfare and Advanced Technology at the Heritage Foundation. I've invited him to give us a perspective on what's now, you know, unfolding with this new arrangement. Brent, thank you for your time. Thanks for your patience. Good to talk with you.
Well, thank you for having me on, Drew.
So let's start with why the U.S. ticked off one of its closest allies, France, by making this deal with Australia and the U.K. behind France's back. Maybe strategically, geopolitically, I mean, what is the importance of this new alliance and relationship? And then why do you think we did this without saying to France, hey, you know, I hope you understand, but this is the deal we got to cut?
Yeah, so I guess the first thing, it really comes down to the Australians made the decision to go this route. And at the G7 summit, there actually was a discussion between Australia and Macron in Paris about this, I guess, displeasure with the conventional submarine program called ATTAC. Its budget has been over double what was planned to almost $60 billion from originally planned around $30 billion. And the delay in the program is about 5 years from when it was originally supposed to be delivered around 2030. So there's been, I guess, a long simmering displeasure on the Australian side. So it really comes down to the Australians not communicating, I guess, as clearly to the French that they were breaking the deal, and it coming to the United States. And certainly the administration should have done a better job in preparing the French for what was announced just last week. The significance of it is, on an operational perspective, is significant. But again, it's going to come down into the execution. Can they actually pull this off?
You know, when Americans hear nuclear powered subs, you know, I immediately think of Polaris missiles being launched from a sub. Will the Aussie subs be capable of carrying nuclear missiles? And what message does this send ultimately to China, who has very hegemonic, you know, ambitions?
So there's a couple pieces to this question. So the first thing, the only thing that was really agreed to last week was to take 18 months between the UK, the United States, and Australia and figure out how they are going to progress to an Australian nuclear submarine. So there's a lot of unanswered questions. And part of it is, what type of nuclear power plant will be designed? Will it be a new one or will it be an existing one? The other is the question is, what kind of weapons will be on board? And included in the Australia, US, and UK agreement was also Tomahawk cruise missiles. Now, they have a nuclear weapons capable variant that's been operated in the past, but it's an open question that's left unanswered. And again, the design is, there's not even a design in which that the Australians have settled on what they require. The conventional boat did not have that kind of capability. It was going to have torpedo tubes and basically as a submarine patroller.
Wow. So the big deal, just for those who may not know, what's the difference between the nuclear sub versus the diesel subs? And, you know, does that, you know, how does that become even more advantageous for Australia?
Yeah. So I was lucky enough to be at Pacific Command when this issue first came up with the follow-on class to Collins. And the expanse of the Pacific Ocean, which Australia strategically wants to patrol and protect, mm-hmm. in the Indian Ocean and the wider Pacific, so from the South China Sea and an arch all the way to the South Pacific, it's the distances are in the thousands of nautical miles. A diesel submarine traveling at about 4 knots underwater, you know, about 5 miles an hour, or on the surface, maybe 15 or 12 miles an hour, it's really going to take a long time for it to get to where it needs to. And then when it gets there, it's not going to have a lot of fuel or food to stay on station doing its mission. A nuclear submarine, on the other hand, it doesn't have a fuel limitation that's measured in gallons. It's measured in years for nuclear right. fuel. So they can get there quickly at full flank speed, very quickly, you know, depending on the design, 20 plus knots. Wow. So much faster to response. And then once they're there, they can stay on station doing the mission for a lot longer than a diesel submarine. So very, it's the right design for the demands of the Pacific.
Yeah, it's a big body of water. Hey, final thought here, and I'm curious because I haven't seen any reaction so far, but what was China's response to this new deal? Have you heard anything? And you know, what was their take?
So as expected, the first thing out was that this was an effort to contain China, a long Cold War, outdated mentality. What I haven't heard yet is that this is an Anglophile approach that's targeting Chinese. And so I'm not sure if that's come out yet, but I expect it soon. But so far, true to form, the Chinese Communist Party has been raising a racket, but not really addressing what's really driving the Australians, the U.S., and U.K. together on this.
Right.
It is their actions.
That's right. You know, I'd heard that they not only denounced the pact, but they said that it creates an arm race. You know, I hope that's not the case. You know, I don't want to see them begin to amp up even a greater military presence there. But, I mean, they're already doing that, aren't they? I mean, we see what they're doing in the South China Sea and a lot of other places. So I think this is a response to all that. Hey, Brent, thank you. I appreciate you being here and for your time and your perspective. I know people want to learn more. They can go to heritage.org and get connected. But look forward to talking with you again.
Absolutely. Have a great day.
Thank you. That's Brent Sadler. And stay with me. I have to take a short pause. When we come back, we will talk more. Our nation is getting bigger and heavier. The obesity pandemic, they claim COVID contributed to that. Last Wednesday, the Centers for Disease and Control and Prevention released new data on how far Americans are pushing the scales. I'll fill you in what they found right after this. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
The CDC says a number of overweight kids continues to rise, and September is Childhood Obesity Awareness Month, and health experts are now urging parents to take action as soon as possible.
Obesity rates have risen among both kids and adults over the last several decades, and health experts say that those health issues that are associated with obesity can be worse in children and last much longer. So it is important to act fast.
In the U.S. right now, 1 in 5 kids are considered obese by doctors. That number is up from just 4% in 1975, according to Dr. Kathleen Winston.
What's most important is to just understand that this has been a long-standing problem. When we look at those examples of the past where children were outside and playing, they didn't think about that as exercise or as a way to keep weight off. It just was their lifestyle.
Winston says preventing weight gain is way easier than attempting to break bad habits and shed the pounds, especially if you're forming those bad habits as a kid.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, we've got a pandemic underway in the country, of course, but there's another epidemic going on, and it's not talked about as much as COVID-19 has been, although it's directly related to it. It's the epidemic of obesity, as you just heard, and it's taking over our nation. Last Wednesday, the CDC, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, they released new data on how far Americans are pushing, you know, how far Americans are pushing the scales. And, you know, we're pushing them pretty far. I was stunned by something I read this morning. I came across a report that said that 16 of our states, they've got 35 to 40% of their populations in the obesity range. 16 states have 35 to 40%. 1 out of 3, 2 out of 5 of their citizens are obese. In another 19 states, 30 to 35% of the population is obese. That's another 1 out of 3, right? That's 35 states. If you add it all up, where on average, we're looking at what, 30 to 40% of the population is way overweight. The only states where 1/4 or less are obese are, take a guess, what states you think don't have this issue? Only just a few of them, right? You got Colorado, okay, Hawaii. I was surprised. Massachusetts and Washington, D.C. is in that category where only 1/4 or less of the citizens there are obese. So I don't know whether it's the food, the exercise. I don't know. Overall, 42% of adults in our country are obese. So 2 out of 5 of Americans right now are overweight. That's pretty serious. It's not just adults. There was a recent study from the CDC that found an estimated 22% of children and teens are obese. You just heard that audio and when we came back. That's up from 19% earlier. Why? Why are our kids getting heavier? A lot of reasons for it, I think. You know, I think a lot of this technology and devices. When I was a kid, I was on a bike. I was playing baseball, football. I was always doing something, right? Swimming. And I think we're much more sedentary today. I also think the food is a big contributor. I also think microbes. We'll talk to Dr. Sean O'Mara about that as well. But it found before the pandemic, kids were a healthy weight. They were gaining about 3.4 pounds a year. Now they're gaining about 5.5 pounds during the pandemic. And of course, you know, we were in lockdown, but this is not just about looking good. It's a health issue for our country too, you know, especially in a pandemic. 78% of the people who have been hospitalized with COVID, they've either been overweight or obese. I was stunned by that. 78%, 8 out of 10 people who've been hospitalized for COVID, they had a weight issue. They were overweight or obese. The numbers for those who needed intensive care or intubation or who died, just about the same. So if you are struggling with your weight, turn up the radio. We're going to talk about it. Obesity increases your risk for getting COVID, and with the lockdowns and other measures in place, I don't think people are getting thinner. I'm joined right now by Dr. Sean O'Mara. He's the medical director for Integrative Health in the VA hospital in St. Cloud, Minnesota. It's good to have him here with us. I invited him to give us some perspective on how we can maybe break what appears to be a deadly cycle. Doctor, good afternoon.
Hi, Drew. It's great to be with you and, again, the Relevant Radio audience.
Yeah, those numbers are stunning, Doctor. They really are when I look at the trajectory that we are currently on. Before we get into what's driving a lot of that, I want to talk the COVID angle here for a second. Why is obesity the number one risk factor for getting COVID? Am I accurate in that assessment? I thought I read that earlier today. Does obesity make you more susceptible?
Absolutely. Yeah. Prior to my joining the VA, I worked full-time 6 months in ICUs down Southwest Texas, taking care exclusively of COVID patients. And I didn't see, there were hundreds of them, but I didn't see a single one that was dying from COVID that didn't have obesity or were overweight as a cause behind their COVID. So it's very, very significant. In my experience, it was higher than 78%. But the exact mechanism by which that is affecting and causing COVID to be worse for people is not well understood, but it does run through metabolism. So the healthier you are, the healthier your metabolic health is, the stronger your ability to fight off disease, and not just disease from COVID, but all forms of disease, chronic disease. And you know, we know that death rates are higher across the board from obesity, from a number of causes, but consider the impact on the quality of life of people that are overweight and obese. It's really sadly underappreciated from a medical perspective. And I think we need to do a far better job in medical schools educating our physicians to the need to address this incredible scourge that's affecting our country.
So, you know, obesity is one thing. What about just being overweight? I don't know what the data is on that, but I would say a lot of Americans, if not all, have more weight than they should, according to whatever the BMI index says you should be. I mean, if I was what they said I should be, I'd be like I'd be a broomstick. But, you know, that's what they say. Hey, is your healthy appropriate weight? What about being overweight without being obese? What does that do for your risk of COVID and your health in general?
It worsens it as well, and we see it across the board. Once you start passing into being overweight, two-thirds of our country is either overweight or obese. Then you see a steady increase in chronic disease and impairment of quality of life. So it really starts early on in those numbers. And we're shocked because we get used to normal weight is, or sorry, overweight looks like. And so when you encounter somebody that's normal weight, you think they're skinny and emaciated, but that's really healthy and normal. If you go to a country where they're not struggling with being overweight and obese, you think they're anorexic or just underweighted. But, you know, when you scan people with MRIs and just show them how much of their body is actually fat, it's overwhelming to the average person.
Oh my gosh. For years I've been saying, I want to come out and get that MRI scan with you. You know, it is eye opening, and that should be motivation. You stick that on the fridge, you know, you just take a look at that. That'll keep you from eating. But let's talk seriously about what's driving these numbers up. I mean, kids, I was surprised to see, you know, they're gaining more weight per year. How big of a contributor was the pandemic? Are there other factors? You and I have spoken about microbiomes. Are things changing in the American diet that are causing people to become heavier? What are your thoughts on why across the board we're seeing this, and now even kids are seeing the increase?
Yeah, so a really interesting field of study is the microbiome. It's probably going to be the most rewarding and effective tool for us in the future to treat chronic disease across the board and reduce mortality and morbidity, the factors we look at in terms of treating disease. So we can save more lives and improve the quality of lives more by understanding and exploiting the microbiome. It's going to be an increasing effort in the future. But what's happening is we, now that we're looking at it more, we see animal studies where we swap feces from one animal and place it into another, and we either can cause obesity or reverse obesity depending upon the donor animal. So if that donor animal is more healthy and not obese, we can correct obesity that's present in other mammal models that we're taking a look at. And we're seeing in humans now, although we don't do this as much with humans, we do fecal microbiota transplants, is basically replacing, putting stool from one human into another. And we treat an infection called C. difficile, and probably people listening have heard about this. And we have seen in humans that either they gain weight or lose weight depending upon the donor of the fecal sample that we get that from. So the take-home point I want to tell your audience to consider is the disease is not obesity. Your condition, your obesity is a symptom of the disease. The disease is you're truly infected with microbes that lead to obesity. It's just a symptom. So we've got to educate physicians and patients to the awareness that this is an infection. Until we treat this infection, Drew, we're not going to win this battle against obesity. So that's how I approach it with my patients and clients that I work with, to get them to understand that they're infected, and then they can actually start making progress and getting the weight off and improving their health. It's fascinating. Yeah.
My guest today is Dr. Sean O'Mara. If you want to join us, we have him for a few moments today. We'll take a few calls for you, okay? You can get in at 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. I have a friend that's a gastroenterologist, and we've talked often about these fecal transplants, and it really is the future in some respects. It seems very bizarre, though, if you think about it you know, when you think about the process itself. But, you know, I often wonder, and this is just a personal question, you know, probiotics, you know, I take them for a healthy gut biome, right? And, you know, you can buy your probiotic online and you get, you know, a million CFUs or 500, whatever they're giving you for these things, right? How do you know which one's good? I mean, is a probiotic healthy for people to take, or are you better off having something natural like kimchi and, you know, fermented foods, yeah, and things along those lines? Maybe you can explain how that works, because, you know, I'd like to have a healthy gut biome. After talking to you multiple times, I understand how critical this is on so many different aspects of health. You even said to me in one time, and I don't want to get too divergent here, but you had mentioned criminals and the link to their microbiome. But I just threw a lot at you. Let's talk about probiotics as well, and how it can affect everything, sure, from mental health to your waistline.
Yeah, so probiotics first, they work differently on different people, and it's probably because they're the makeup of their own individual microbiome. So sometimes they work for people, sometimes they don't. But universally, they're pretty expensive, and so I typically recommend people not to take them. Save their money, put it in the church basket, or use it to buy healthier food or a combination of both. But to avoid the costly probiotic supplements, because It's first of all an industry that's its major mission is to generate profit, not to improve the health of humans across the board. They may, but their biggest mission is to make money. So the best way to get the best benefits to enhance your microbiome is to eat fermented foods. So things like kimchi, your grandmother's homemade sauerkraut that she makes in a crock, maybe keeps in the garage. Those kind of practices, you can buy these probiotic fermented foods in the majority of supermarkets today. So it's exciting that these are becoming so popular that now mainstream supermarkets are carrying fermented foods. You must ask specifically, make sure they're fermented, they're not pasteurized. They have to be in a refrigerated case. It can't be something off a shelf or in a can or a bag that's sitting on a shelf, because that means they're pasteurized and they will not have any living microbes in them. So it's these living, right, microbes that are the benefit and not the food themselves. And that's why you want to eat fermented foods. Yep.
All right, let's just grab a few calls. You know, Doctor, when you're on, I could have you for 3 hours, but our time is always so limited. We'll go to the Central Coast of California. Danny's listening to us there. Hi, Danny. You're on the air with Dr. O'Mara.
Yeah, hi. I just wanted to put my part in as far as the cause of the obesity. I think it's mostly diet-based, because a lot of our meats are grain-fed. And two stories to speak to that is, one, I knew a gal, she had come up from Mexico, and she would tell stories about how when she was in Mexico, she used to eat 20 tacos, and here she can only eat two. And Mexico, she says, I would eat 20 enchiladas. Here, I can only eat two. Her point being that the food, the way it's prepared here, it was just very greasy. And my own experience is I'm a hunter, and comparing the meats that I buy in the market with the ones that I harvest, I can tell the fat content, because when I'm preparing the meat, let's say poultry, my hands are greasy after I prepare it. Whereas, let's say I'm preparing quail that I've harvested, my hands feel clean, just like water. Their juices,
yeah.
There's no fat.
Okay. That's a great point, Danny. Let me respond. First of all, thank you for your question. And natural meat is far healthier, and the role that food plays in obesity is absolutely essential. But what happens very often is that the microbes that live in your gut drive your cravings to eat certain food. And different microbes have different needs for different sources of food. So it's usually the simple carbohydrates, the simple food, sugars and breads and flours and grain and things that most contribute to obesity. But it's exacerbated when it's also consumed with high-fat foods, fatty foods. So the worst combination is fat with carbohydrates. But, these microbes cause people to crave different things, and game meat is far healthier for you than the processed foods, but the meat that we oftentimes get in supermarkets that have been grain-fed, fed an artificial diet to cause those animals to get very large, and oftentimes they're fed hormones to increase their weight so that they generate more profit. But whenever I get a chance, Danny, to eat food that from a hunter, I prefer that because it's far healthier for you, and you're right to point that out.
All right, let's move along to Jeannie. Thanks, Danny. She's listening in Las Vegas, Nevada. Hi, Jeannie.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I just was wondering, two things. One, is there always an affection with obesity? Because I feel like some people were so driven by, time and work that a lot of people don't eat healthy. And then the other thing, how much does genetically altered food influence this?
Okay, great questions, Jeannie. So first, let me do the second one first. So genetic food probably doesn't play as much of a role. Genetic altered foods have been around for over a decade, close to two decades now, and there hasn't been demonstrated a strong connection to that. But as far as the role of lifestyle, clearly lifestyle plays a role. But what happens to people that are short on time, they want to be fed right away, and their cravings drive them to eat every 15 minutes. People that are overweight are literally hungry and suffering cravings every 15 minutes. And so if they work a lot and they're stressed out, increased cortisol levels can increase their desire for the wrong kinds of foods as well, and they make poor choices. But the necessity to address all the contributions of obesity are important, I think, to take a look at, to include your schedule, your lifestyle, your hours that you work, and stress. But I have found the greatest success in getting people to cut out those processed foods, carbohydrates, and simple sugars, and feeding the microbes that are healthy with good sources of whole food, whole vegetables, whole healthy meat is the best way to eradicate those bad microbes and to cut the insatiable cravings that people have. People don't crave broccoli. They don't crave meat. These microbes cause them to crave sugars and breads and tortillas and pasta and pizza. That's what's going on. So treating that infection first is step number one.
Well, it's fascinating. GMOs, I know in certain countries they're forbidden. Here in our own country, there's a lot of them. And this is a long shot. I don't know if there's any evidence. Any connection between cancer or overall health with genetically modified food versus food that's not?
Yeah, not so far. But the necessity to do studies to capture that, very elegant studies, they're costly, they're expensive, and they're hard to do. So I caution people to eat the most natural forms of food. You can't go wrong with nature, what God made. So,
amen.
You know, then we change what God made. It's not quite right, God. We can change it, improve on it. Really?
Yep.
We're going to improve on what God created? But that's really, I think, the effort that a lot of, you know, genetically modified food is trying to do, all for the sake of profit.
Yeah.
So I think it's safest to avoid them. But I cannot say that I've seen any conclusive studies that they're leading to cancer or any strong connection to any other disease for that matter.
My guest today, Dr. Sean O'Mara. We're talking about the nation's obesity epidemic and some of the big numbers that have come up. Mary in Elgin, Illinois, I'm going to let you on very quickly. I have about a moment for you, so go right ahead.
Yes, my question is, someone with UC, can it be treated with a fecal transplant?
Fascinating. They cannot. But we're finding out people with inflammatory bowel disease that have undergone FMTs for C. difficile are getting cured of ulcerative colitis and Crohn's disease. Wow. So you can't get it done specifically, but if you happen to have C. diff, then you can get the FMT. But one way to do a very quick FMT is just hang with healthy people. You'll get their microbes. And so that's a really good approach to think about.
Doctor, stay in the line. I do want to ask you a question. Okay, I got to take a short pause here, though. The Chaplet of Divine Mercy is straight ahead. If you have a need or you just want some extra prayer power, we're here together. I'll share some of the intentions that came in, and we got a special guest praying with us, all right? We'll fill you in on that right into this.